And so, Cole, we missed that jumping in today. And I think one of the challenges of a content creator that actually really does the thing. So, Cole, I think what makes me a little different is it's actually hard for me to film. Like, you ended up waiting for me, I think, 4 hours to film today's episode. And it's not me being a jerk, guys, so I don't want to get lit up in the comments that Cole was locked in here. He had other things he was doing. But I'm actually, like, really running businesses. Like, I don't play an actor on TV that's like, gosh, if I had a business, this is how I think I would do it and how I would tell other people to run a business if I had one. Here's how I might think about it. And that's what most content creators are today, right? They are actually not business people. They are professional content creators. Welcome back to Be Wealthy with Brett Tanner. It is episode 0012. Cole, we're way past the 1% mark. 1% of people get to 10, so they say. And how many get to 100? We don't know. Who's even tracking that? How would you even get that data? It's impossible. But we are back with episode 12. Today's about evaluating opportunities. So in our life, there's many different opportunities that are going to come to us. I'm going to talk about two different types and how to think about them. The main idea being you make all your money off what you say no to. And so before we jump into today, I just came back from Cabo, Cole. It was spring break. My kids go to two different schools, so we have two different spring breaks. So it's kind of cool. I get to go. I'm going Cabo. I'm actually going to diving in Roatan next week. But I went to Cabo, Cole, and I stayed at the place that had the best service of anywhere I've been in the world. Anywhere. Now, here's what's crazy, Cole. I stayed at the Ritz-Carlton Zaydoun. It's a Ritz-Carlton Reserve. I didn't know what that meant. Full disclosure to everybody. And we had a butler. So, Cole, I actually would never feel comfortable spending this amount of money. And I think it's interesting on how we grow our wealth and what we spend money on. And I have this marker. I think all of us do a marker around how much a hotel room should cost. And Cole, I think back to when I was in my 20s. Cole, when I was 24 like you, a hotel room, this is going to blow your mind, Cole. It's making me feel like I'm 1,000 years old. Cole, do you know how much a hotel room was when I was 24 years old? So this is 20 years ago.
$150.
Like a nice room.
$450.
No, if someone said $300, you're like, what? It's $300. Well, what is it? I mean, but there was a lot of rooms you would stay in, there'd be $100 to $200. I mean,
what a world.
I know that sounds impossible. So, like, when I see this room is $3,500 a night, I go, yeah, I'm out. I'm just not doing it. I don't care if dolphins fly out of the ocean into my room, into the bathtub, and we get to pet them. That's cool. But no, I wouldn't do it. So I actually stayed on points. Cool. I'm a big points guy. Our companies have a lot of spend. And so it was a way that I used those points, and it was unbelievable. Unbelievable. The craziest part is, Cole, it's packed. $3,500 a night, $4,000 a night. Drinks are insane. Breakfast, Cole. This is where I blew my mind. How much do you think breakfast is? Two adults, two kids, and the kids are eating like a kid's meal pancake type situation. What do you think breakfast cost in Cabo at the Ritz-Carlton?
If it was $250, I'd be like, whoa.
Okay, well,
like $100 and, you know, $25 for the kids. Well,
prepare to get your mind blown. $225 to $250 every day.
Feels insane, but that's if it's a nice place. I feel like that's what a nice place would be, you know.
The place had a beautiful view, but I wouldn't say. It's a pancake, so I don't know how nice the pancakes can be. It's like there was nothing magic in the pancake. Cold to pancake.
No gold flakes or.
That would have been cool. But so anyway, I came back from there. I went fishing. I caught the biggest marlin. I didn't catch it. My 10-year-old caught 110 inches, which is 400-ish pounds. We didn't measure, but I got, we could throw a picture up actually or drop it in the show notes. But unbelievable. I love fishing Cabo. It was amazing. And last episode, we talked about Dave Ramsey. So I did two episodes on Dave Ramsey and what I think. If you didn't watch them, go watch both. Episode 10 and 11. On number 10, I discuss what I thought about Dave Ramsey. There was a lot of people said I missed it, Cole. I was off the mark. I was totally out of touch. I didn't have his all of his true teachings. And I took the time on episode 11 to actually go to his actual website. So unless he was hacked, which I don't know if we'll be able to confirm if it was hacked or not, or if someone hacked all the writing in those books he wrote, if they didn't, I feel like I nailed it on episode 11, where I really walk through some of Dave and where he and I disagree on the wealth building journey. So go back and check that out. And today, again, I want to dig in, Cole, everything about opportunity. I built this selfishly as a serial entrepreneur who wants to start a company every single day. And I had to have a way that when I think about starting a business or I think about an entrepreneurial endeavor, how do I think about it methodically? And how can I say yes to the right things and say no to the wrong things? Because life's all about saying no to the right things so you can say yes to what you really, really want. And Cole, it took me a long time to understand that. I think as you're younger, you're more prone to say yes to everything. And maybe that's pressure from your friends or your parents or your family. Hey, come along. Let's go do this. We're going to do all going to do this thing. And there's this, I don't want to say obligation, but there's just this pull to always say yes. And I was one of those people too. And as I went down the business arena, the more things I said no to, the more available time, resource, capital that I had by saying no, freed me up to say yes to the best investment, to say yes to the best business, to say yes to hiring the best staff. And for me, that made absolutely all the difference in my life. And so ultimately, I created a criteria, and I want you to go do the same thing. And so as I jump into today, I got a few pointers here to keep me going, and I want to jump in there. So when we think about opportunity, Cole, the first thing we think about, what is an opportunity cost? Right? Opportunity cost represents the potential benefits that an individual investor or business misses out on when choosing one alternative over another. Because opportunity costs are unseen by definition, they can easily be overlooked. Understanding the potential missed opportunities when a business or individual chooses one investment over another allows for better decision-making. And so we filmed an episode we'll link in the show notes that was all about soft costs and the soft costs in life. We talked about that. And so what I want to talk about here is just all about how do you evaluate opportunity. All right, today's sponsor is, I believe, the best education in the whole life industry. So we've had a lot of questions that have come on the website about whole life, and we're going to film an episode in the future about whole life. For those that are looking for more information, go to savelikeabank.com and start your education. You can sign up for their free education. Honestly, they should charge a fortune. It's so good. Go watch the education and get knowledgeable. So when I film the podcast, you can ask the question of, is whole life insurance right for me? So there's two types of opportunities we're going to talk about today. If you're going to buy a business, and how do you evaluate it? How should you think about it? And not due diligence, but how should you think about it mentally if this is something you should do or not? And secondly, we'll talk about how to evaluate a real estate asset. We'll just use simple real estate asset. And it would apply to a building or apartment building or commercial building. But we'll really talk about what I think about when you're looking at how to evaluate those opportunities. So right now, I would have you go pull out a sheet of notes, pull out a page, and write down three potential businesses you're thinking about starting or you have interest in or might start. Right? Just dream a little, write down three. And then I want you to circle and pick the one that you could start the soonest. This is the one that if you were most likely to do something tomorrow, if something changed in your life, this is the business you would start. Or if you own a business right now, this is one you would think about starting in addition to the one you have. So I want you to have that business. And I want you to think about your current criteria that you have to evaluate a business. What would you normally be thinking? And then I want you to ask yourself these questions. And so we'll link all the questions in the show notes, but I'm going to ask you the questions and kind of give you my feedback on them. So number one, the first question I ask, what is the upside of this business? When you think 3 years out in the future and things are meeting your expectations, you're not living your wildest fantasy, Cole. This isn't like you're going to the Ritz-Carlton and having $225 breakfast every day type money, Cole. But 3 years from now, this business is performing exactly like you want it to. Okay, it's doing everything you want it to. You're happy. You're pleased. What's that dollar figure? And boil it down to an annual dollar figure. When I first started playing this game, I would start a company. If I could make an extra $100,000 per year, I was willing to start that business. It made a lot of sense. It would grow my income. You know, that was a very critical number to me at that time. Today, the way we think about it, right? If we're going to start a company within 3 years, if we cannot get it to $1 million net, it is not a venture that we would start. It would make more sense to spend time on our current companies that we already have. And so, Cole, we missed that jumping in today. And I think one of the challenges of a content creator that actually really does the thing. So, Cole, I think what makes me a little different is it's actually hard for me to film. Like, you had waiting for me, I think, 4 hours to film today's episode. And it's not me being a jerk, guys, so I don't want to get lit up in the comments that Cole was locked in here. He had other things he was doing. But I'm actually, like, really running businesses. Like, I don't play an actor on TV that's like, gosh, if I had a business, this is how I think I would do it and how I would tell other people to run a business if I had one. Here's how I might think about it. And that's what most content creators are today, right? They are actually not business people. They are professional content creators. So, Cole, we're not professional content creators. I mean, you are, but I'm not.
Which is why this is so hard. You're running a business, and we can't create the content about running the business.
It is a weird thing, right? It's being a teacher, presenter. I think it's more cool if you make it up, Cole, because it sounds really awesome, right? Like, I could really make some of these businesses we have seem real cool if I made it up. Or, like, what if I talked about what I think it would be to have it? Like, you know, think how cool of a business you could make up if you weren't going to do it.
God, it'd probably crush online.
What would be your business if you could make up something?
Probably something related to Mars or the moon.
Oh, astronaut cowboy, instantly. Astronaut cowboy, out of the gates.
Are we doing this? Okay.
All right. Podcast next week, The Astronaut Cowboy. Find us everywhere. So, all right. So we're back. That was a tangent, but you actually got to think it's not an astronaut cowboy business, Cole, but 3 years out, what could this business make? What's your number? It has to be worth your time. Hey, if you like what you're hearing so far, hit the subscribe and give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps the show a bunch. It keeps Cole and I going. We do read your reviews. First one from Bubba12K. Very tactical, down-to-earth wisdom. Brett and others alike are what is needed in my life to stay the course and be disciplined. Building can be such a lonely struggle at times, so I can appreciate how Brett delivers content in the blunt way it should be delivered. His beliefs hit home to me and are spot on in how I see the world. Years ago, we did meet at a Keller Williams event. That's cool. That's awesome, Bubba. I appreciate that. I try to be a truth teller, Cole, in a what I believe is largely a fake world. And that is a very hard thing to do. It's a very hard thing to do. I'm going to go with Birdman Deuce.
Ooh.
First of all, greatest name ever, Birdman Deuce. With social media, anyone can become an influencer and get people to start to follow him and take advice from people that have no business giving it. Brett's the real deal, and he only shares what he's personally doing in his business. People who have been in Brett's world for a while have paid thousands of dollars for the same information. This is pure gold. I've shared with my team, my friends, my family. Thanks, Brett, for all you do to keep up the great content. It is our pleasure to be here and serve you. So please type us. Go out there and get us a review, Cole. Do it. Do the right thing. Give us 5 stars if you feel like today was solid. I feel like we nailed a 5-star. All right, number two, what are the dangers or challenges, right? So when you start this business and you think about it, what are the dangers or challenges in that business? What are you missing? This is where you want to think about all the blind spots, the things that could go wrong. And if you've read that book, The Six Thinking Hats, this is where you're thinking about the black hat. Like, where are the problems, the challenges? What have I overlooked? What are my obstacles? What can go wrong in this business as I go to hit my goal that I defined in number one, right? If I'm gonna make $100,000 in 3 years from this business, what are the challenges or barriers or competitive things that are getting my way? All right, number three, third question I ask, do I have the right jockey for this business that is not me? Because businesses are going to require management, people, time, effort, and things, and you already likely have a job. All of us have a day job. So again, this was a business that you are starting that you are not in. We're assuming if you have a day job, you're keeping it for the time being, for the sake of this exercise. If you have a business, you're staying running in your current role in that business. So you need to find the jockey, someone that's in that industry. It's either proven, someone you want to bet on, that's got the energy and the ambition to go do this thing. Do you have the jockey for this business? I will not start a business without the jockey that can drive it. That is not me. All right, Cole, number four, people. Never been a harder time to manage people. Never been a time where folks didn't want to work. It's a fascinating thing, Cole. In the last 3 weeks, we're interviewing for some different positions in our companies. And the amount of times someone said, ooh, is this a, like, and this is a clearly like an ad for an in-office position. Like, they're going to come into our office and work here. And one of the first things, like, ooh, is this going to be like, you mean like a full 40 hours a week in your office? I was like, well, yeah, it's kind of like all in the ad, like in office, right? You know, 8 to 5. And people are like, wow, is it, how flexible is it? It's like, it's a front desk position. So like, you're going to literally be at the front desk when people come to the door. It's a front desk. Well, can I work from home? Can you work the front desk from home? Like, Cole, so this is why number four is so important. How many people are going to be in this business? Because you only can have some of those conversations and then your hair just goes straight white. I'm in the edge, Cole. I think I'm 2 clicks away from just straight white, like the Be Wealthy sign. But so I try to stay away from companies that have large amounts of human capital. I'm not anti-human. The businesses that take lots of people to run, I find they're complex. I'd rather leverage technology or some other efficiency. And so I try to stay away from large people businesses. It's just something for me. That's part of my criteria. All right, number five. Number five, you need to do a little self-reflection and ask yourself what you're bringing to the table. What are you bringing to the table? There's three resources in life: money, talent, and time. Most of us in the beginning are blessed with limited money, limited talent, and lots of time. That was the gift I had. I just had I had time like just you can't even imagine. I had all of it. I didn't have any money and I had very limited talent. So when I think about this business I'm investing in, what are you bringing to the table? You would always prefer, once you're established and going, you would prefer to invest money, right? You would prefer to invest your money, not invest your time. Your time is very finite. Your money can be infinite as you go and grow it. And so I always want to be the guy putting in time. I'm happy to use influence, but prefer all time. So define this business. What are you bringing to the table? All right, number six, I measure noise, and I think about noise a lot. What is noise, Cole? Again, that's how you get white hair. Noise is just this. You've got this business going, and on Friday night, you're going home. You're driving to date night with your lady friend. So I'd be driving to date night with the lovely, lovely Taylor Tanner. And I get a phone call as I'm driving to date night, Cole, and it's like, I see the call come in, and you're going, oh, man. Oof. That's noise. Right? That is a noisy business. So how many of those calls will I get? Again, I ask myself that. As an example, as a noisy business, might be construction. I love what people do in construction. We have a number of trades that work on all of our flips, but that business is noisy, right? There's a lot of people in it. You're counting on others. And so there's just a lot of noise that can get created. And so I try to stay out of noisy businesses. All right, number seven, I want to look, is there anything special or proprietary in that business? Is there anything unique? What's the moat around that business? One of the reasons I love hard money is I feel like that there's a moat, right? You have to have enough cash to do one loan, right? So that might be $200,000 to $300,000 if you want to play in the hard money game. And so that is a relative moat. Also, certain states require licensing. There's a number of issues that can come up. It's a little more complicated in terms of the paperwork. You're drawing loan docs. You've got a promissory note. And so that gives you some sort of moat around that business. And so I love business where you've got some competitive advantage. All right, number eight is probably the most important. It would be the most important factor in determining will you have initial success in the business is, do you already have the customers for this product or service? I can't tell you the businesses I've started where I already have the customers are 1,000 times easier, Cole, than the ones that I start where I don't have them. I started a cryotherapy franchise, and Cole, that didn't link to any of our other businesses. I just went and froze myself once and said, I gotta be a part of this. This guy is touching a button, putting some cold gas on people and charging $85. This is a business I wanna be a part of to freeze people in cryo. I can tell you, we flipped that business. We sold it. We were actually gonna create a franchise, be the franchisor. Cole, we only got to store 1.5 and we called it a wrap and sold that. But we didn't have the customers in our existing companies for that. It made it a lot harder. And so anytime you start a company where you already have a customer or a link to that customer, that's a logical path for them. Again, if you're in a real estate transaction, the things that touch that business, right, from mortgage, title, insurance, those kinds of things make sense to play in that game. What is that? Is there another vendor, product, or service that's kind of in the line of your particular business? All right, number nine, does it require travel? Cole, again, I mentioned I love to travel for fun. Big travel for fun guy. Traveling for work is not my favorite. It's absolutely, some people love it. A lot of people love to travel. It is not my jam. And so for business things, that if I'm going to start a company, it requires lots and lots of travel. I want to know about in the front end so I can think about that and prioritize my time accordingly. All right. And last thing, how passionate, on a scale of 1 to 5, where 4 is not an option, how passionate are you about this opportunity? And I'm going to give you 2 ways to think about it. It can be your passion for the business. So scale of 1 to 5. You can't pick 4. Where are you in your passion for the business? The other thing I think about, I have businesses where I'm not that passionate, but the jockey, the person that I have in there running that business for us, I am a 5 out of 5 passion for them. I do not believe you should start any business that you're not a 5 out of 5 passion for either the business or the person, because when things get hard, Cole, and when you're out there crushing it, because it's not all roses and sunsets, Cole, it'll be a blast when you start a new business. Like the first month or 2 months or 3 months of any new business is like the best. Cause it's like, it's all fresh. There's no residual problems. It's all new. You're figuring it out, learning. Give that a decade. Okay. And so that's where, if your passion isn't there, Cole, sometimes you're going to flame out. And you've got to have the passion and want to stay in it when it's hard. And you got to believe in a bigger cause and know where you're going and get a tribe of people that want to rally around. And can you create a world big enough that they want to be a part of it? And so you having that level of passion is what's going to drive your organization and let other people want to be a part of your vision. And it's so important that passion trumps almost anything, right? Passion creates momentum. And it might be the most important question under is, how passionate are you about the business? So I'd have you go back and I would think about adding any other questions to it. Now, I have a really good friend of mine who added on to the questions. Cool. And this is a person much smarter than me. Actually, people will know him. Roland Frazier, buddy of mine, good guy. We taught together. Roland Frazier, great dude.
Another great content creator, also doing the thing.
Here's the thing about Roland. Here's his problem with his content. Probably he's got one incredible content. He actually does the thing, like real guy actually doing stuff, you know? So he's not behind a camera all day just saying, God, I wonder what it'd be like if I actually did something. No. he's a guy that does it. So love Roland. Here was some of his criteria. So I'll speak a little to him. He said, number one, do I like the people? Cole, what do you mean this business? Do I like the industry? Do I like the people I'm going to interface with in that space? I might actually have to change my criteria. I haven't seen this in a minute. Does it look fun? I think it is important. There are certain businesses that look fun, that are fun to be involved with. You've got great people. You're doing things that are enjoyable. Like, I don't know, Cole, if I could have a charter boat business, Cole, where I somehow get to fish with the customers. That seems fun, right? Seems like my jam. He asked the question, is it already profitable? I think that's a good one. Is it already making money? Right? Can I buy it at a multiple? Is it already actually making money? He asked, can it be worth $10 million or more to him in the next 6 years? So pick your number. How he uses 6 years out, I don't know if he got there, but is it worth X dollars to you in that period of time? What's that number? Let's define that number. Does it already have traction / product market fit? Have they already nailed their customer? Maybe a larger organization. They've got a working product. It's got a sales funnel. It's got operations. It's got repeat customers. It's on the wheel. That business is moving. Is it already earning over $1 million in top line? That's a really interesting question. And the reason I think that's interesting is it's 10 times harder, in my opinion, to get the first million in top line than it is to add the next million to go from 1 to 2 million. It's 10 times harder to get that first million. So getting a company that's already got there, right? You're taking that initial kind of rocket, Cole, when the rocket's taken off, a lot of force is needed to get there. But once it gets out there, Cole, it's easy to go. Think about that, Cole. Think about that for a minute. I don't even know what the graphic would be around that, but it's gonna be something incredible. And so does the model scale easily without a large capital expense or an investment? Does it scale easily, or is it some businesses, as they grow, they start lighting a lot of money on fire? I got to keep buying more equipment, right? More inventory or something like that. And it could chew up a ton of capital. So does the business scale easily without a large capital investment over time? Is it in a long-term proven market that is not simply hot because it's new or trendy? Ooh, Cole, goes to the NFT game. You know, it goes to all the kind of eclectic things we hear about the influencers on the right now. You don't have to go very far to hear about all that's going on with Bitcoin.
Well, there goes my business idea.
Yeah, cool. And
it's gone. Just like
and
that.
And just like that. Well, that's why you can't be in the trendy things, like our friend Roland says. All right. And is it free of a lot of regulatory oversight? Is it free of a lot of regulatory oversight? I think those are great questions to add to the list. So what I'd have everyone do, go back and take my questions, take my friend Roland's questions, and what are the questions that matter to you? Pick the top 10, take my list, take his list, add to it on your own, and pick your opportunity criteria, because no matter what happens, you're going to have an opportunity come to you. You're going to have something hit you in the next 30, 60, 90 days, and you're going to want to have an ability and a method to work through it. I keep it right at Apple Notes. When I think of a business, I pull it up and I run through my questions. I start asking, okay, what is my upside? What is this worth my time? All right, second thing, Cole, let's talk about. Let's go off. We're going off business. Now we're going to talk about a hard asset. So Cole, we're going to go, our business is crushing it. We want to make an investment. And so how should we think about evaluating a hard asset? And for this, I think, for the sake of it, let's do a single family home. So what do you want to look at? When you're looking at buying a single family home for investment purposes, first thing I do is I pull the cap rate. I want to know the cap rate of the property, which is the capitalization rate. It assumes you paid all cash. There is a point to this. And some people say, well, is the cap rate the only thing you look at? Absolutely not. I look at a number of things. But I think the cap rate tells me in about 30 seconds whether I want to move forward and even evaluate the deal. So the first thing I'm going to look at, I'm going to plop, and we'll drop a link, Cole, to these calculators it's a basic just Excel that'll show you how we think about a cap rate.
It is on bewealthybrett.com/resources. Download a bunch of good stuff there.
If you go to bewealthybrett.com/resources, not only do you get this calculator.
Change your life.
Change the way you think. You change the way you look at things, Cole. The things you look at change.
That's what's on the website.
Write that down for a minute. Let's think about that. So when we're evaluating, you're going to go through this calculator. You're going to plug in the annualized rent, and then you're going to put in the actual insurance of what that would be. You can estimate it, but hopefully you've got other rental property. You can get a quick quote online, pop that in there. Get your annual taxes. If there's an HOA, put that in there. You're going to go through, what's the management fee? What are you paying? Even if you are going to self-service this property, you're going to manage yourself, you need to put in a 10% management fee. Why? If you make more money, I'm sure you'll be cool with that. But I want a budget for you that if you were to pay a management fee, you're already accustomed to it, you've got it built in, and you're buying the property, assuming you didn't have to do all the work yourself. If you choose to do something, that's great. We want a budget for it without that. Then we want to go, I want to assume that whatever the rent is, so if a property is renting for $2,500 a month, I want to assume that out of every single year, I'm going to spend 1 month's rent on repairs throughout the year. So if it's $2,500 per month in rent, I'm going to spend $2,500 per year is my target goal. Now, Cole, that is very hard to do. There's some tricks you've got to do. You've got to landlord really, really well when you have your turns. I try to, on my first turn, get rid of the carpet if I'm going to go all tile or wood plank throughout. And I'm trying to reduce future turns in carpet because I don't care how good you are, Cole, tenants trash carpet. Cole, they do. They just, it's a constant ongoing thing. So the more things like that, that I can invest in to drive down cost, landscaping, having, you know, more desert landscaping, less plants, all those things, I'm trying to drive down my cost. All right. Vacancy. I assume that the tenant's going to sign a one year lease and it's going to be vacant for 1 month following that. So I assume it'll be vacant 1 month every single year. So I estimate it $2,500 per month. It's going to be vacant 1 month, cost me $2,500. And then what I'm looking at is the cap rate. Again, the net return divided by my purchase price gives you the cap rate, the capitalization rate on my money. What is the rate of return I'm earning? And so if I bought a $250,000 house, like the one you can see on the screen here, and I had $30,000 in annual rent, and those are all my expenses, in what I would land is a 7.18% cap rate. So people, the thing they don't think about when evaluating a hard asset is that cap rate good or bad? Well, it depends. So Cole, if you were to put me in a time machine and you were just all of a sudden close your eyes, Cole, and I was to jump back to January of 2 years ago, 2022. And I could, if I saw this property, Cole, and it's a 7.18% cap rate in Chandler Gilbert, do you think I would buy it?
I'd say, yeah.
Okay. I would. Now today, Cole, same property sitting right in Chandler Gilbert, would I buy it?
Just a tad harder.
Why is it harder though?
Interest rates a little bit higher.
So I refinanced the bulk of my portfolio in January of 2022. There's an important reason, you'll note that in a minute. And my bank, my local bank, had said they were offering some offer where you could buy down the points, and I had I could get in with 3.5% interest rate on a 30-year fixed mortgage on an investment property. I'd never seen a rate that low. And I had to pay points, again, for all the critics that'll come online. I had to pay points to do that. And everyone said, I don't know why you're doing that. Rates have been low for so long. I was like, I've never seen a 3% 30-year fixed mortgage. And if I can refinance with cash out, Cole, it makes sense to me to take that cash and I'll put it in hard money lending and I'll do other things with it. And I did that. Now, so Cole, if I can go buy a 7.18% cap rate and I'm borrowing money at 3.5%, I'm getting over 3.5% spread. So every dollar I borrowed, every single dollar, I'm making 3.5% on the money I borrowed, Cole. Like it's insane. Like it's a license to print money. Now today, if I'm borrowing money at 8.5% and I'm only getting 7.18%. Now, Cole, it's not a trick. You can't make it up in volume. Like it doesn't work. I'm losing over 1% on every dollar that I borrowed. Like it's a simple idea. You have to have the positive spread when you buy a property. There's three types of spread. You've got a positive spread. So I'm earning more in my cap rate than my long-term debt cost. I've got a neutral spread. So if I'm borrowing money at 7.18% and I'm going to have a 7.18% cap rate, that's a neutral spread. A negative spread would be my interest rate's 8.5% or 8.18%, and I'm only able to get a cap rate of 7.18%, so I'm going to get a negative 1% spread. Will I still buy a property that my interest rate's higher than the cap rate? Yes, I just have to put a tremendous amount of cash down to get that to cash flow at the level that I need to hit my monthly cash flow requirement. So the cap rate's a great place to start. Hey, does this make sense? Where is it at in terms of a spread? What will my spread be? And how much additional capital I need to put in to make this investment potentially make sense before I evaluate anything else? So everything starts with the math, right? Number one, what is the raw math? What is the cap rate? And is a recovering deal junkie when it comes to real estate? I want to buy, Cole, every deal I see. And I will see a deal and I'm like, oh my gosh, this thing's going to rent. Oh, this thing's going to rent for $2,900 a month. And I start going and I try to talk myself in and I'm like, well, no, but it's not $2,900, it's $2,500. And then I walk myself in and I'm like, man, this is a 5% cap rate on a house to buy with 8.5% debt. It doesn't make any sense. So first thing, you've got to look at the cap rate. It's got to make sense. Next thing, you want to evaluate your properties, your rental properties, you want to put them all and you want to get all the data that we're going to give you on our rental tracker here. Again, it's eight. What is our go to BeWealthyBrett.com/resources
kaboom
Kaboom. And go get this rental tracker. You should put all of your data in here and you look at a couple key numbers, which we'll walk through in a minute. All right. So we're going to give you a spreadsheet. You put all of your rental properties in here and you put all the data, and there's a lot of data to put in here, but we're looking at a few key numbers. Number one, we talked about the cap rate off your purchase price. So we want to enter that. That'll never change. The cap rate when you bought it will never change. We just did them in their sheet, but you're going to enter it here. The next thing we want to look at is your cash on cash returns. If you're going to put leverage on the property, you need the net income that you're going to make annually divided by the amount of money you put down, right? That's going to be your cash on cash return. And so you want to calculate that. I love seeing 10% or more cash on cash. Cold love a 20, of course, who doesn't? But 10% is good. One of my rules on cash on cash returns, I always put 20 to 30% down every single time when I'm buying something. Now that's a lending requirement, but even if it wasn't a requirement, Cole, I'm going to put I've got to be there to hit my numbers. After that, I still have to cash flow $500 per month. So if I have to put 46% down to get to my $500 per month, that's what I'm going to do. And so you should not look at the cash on cash return if you're not putting that down, because cash on cash returns incentivize you. You have the potential for a higher return if you put the least amount down. If I only put $100,000, or if I only put $1,000 down, Cole, and I can make $1,000 per year somehow off a property, I'm making 100% return on my money. So the cash on cash return, but I could be taking exponential risk. So you got to look at your cash on cash returns in terms of a risk profile. The last number you look at, you need to go all the way in the spreadsheet once you key it all in, and you want to look at your expense ratio. And when it comes to rental properties, people don't talk about this. They all talk about how much they're getting in rent, but rent is something you can't really control. In other words, there's market rent. If I have a property that's $2,500 a month and I'm like, oh, I'm going to rent it for $3,200 a month, Cole, I'm going to put it everywhere. I'm going to have open houses for tenants. I'm going to have a gorilla jumping around outside. I'm going to have one of those dancy guys, right? I'm going to have all that, Cole. You can't rent it a $2,500 house, Cole. You're not going to pay $3,200 a month. You're not going to do it. It doesn't make any sense, right? But what I can control is my expenses. Right. So if I landlord better and I can decrease the repairs, if I can lease it faster, I can reduce vacancy. Right. The opportunity, if I can look at make sure my taxes are being correctly and I'm not being overcharged for tax, I might appeal my tax rate on certain properties where I think it's too high. And so it's all the win that occurs in rental properties occurs on the expense side of things.
And what's that number for you that you like to have in there?
I need to be at 35% or less to make money. Right, to make the kind of returns I want, 35% or less. So when I analyze this, I sort by it. And if I see something that say 42, I go, look, what's driving that? And the best example I could give you, Cole, I had these two rental properties and they were across the street from each other. And I was in a different city. The city ran down the street line. And so this city's taxes were $150 more per month than this city's taxes. The tenants, these were two kind of 2,000 square foot homes. Well, the tenants on this side of the street, they pay the exact same amount. So all I've chosen by owning a rental property here versus there was to make $150 a month less indefinitely. Well, long-term, it's not the most logical thing, Cole. That doesn't make a tremendous amount of sense. So I would just, if I want to be in that neighborhood and keep that investment, I would just sell the house and buy the other one. But, or I could just have a spreadsheet like this and do it on the front end and know that ahead of time, Cole, and go, oh, man, this is going to really affect my cap rate and my expense load is going to be over 35%. This is going to be a hard property to make sense of. Properties with high HOAs, very like low price properties with very high HOAs, which we're blessed with that in Arizona. Cole, you can find a $250,000 condo with somehow an $800 a month HOA. And that's going to be really hard to pencil. You're going to need a different calculator, Cole, to do those calculations. It's very complicated when you get in there. So go in there, you need to do a cap rate, and then you want your cap rate off purchase. The last calculation you want to do is over time, you want to keep adjusting your value. Once a year, I'll go in and update the values in the spreadsheet. What is the cap rate off today's value? So you got net income today, but value has gone up. So you might have bought, I'll give you an example. If you bought a property for $100,000, and Cole, you got to fact check my math here. I'm going to do my head. If I own a property for $100,000 and that's $10,000 per year, that's a 10% cap rate. Now that property, let's say it went to $400,000, Cole, and now the property's making $20,000 a year net. So the property went up 4x, but rents doubled. So now, Cole, my cap rate, I just went to 5%. Fact check my math, 20,000 divided by 400,000, I'm pretty sure it's gonna be 5%. I think that's legit.
Results will be on the screen right now.
And boom, be on the screen. So I believe that's right. So again, because rents didn't climb at the same rate as the property, so now I'm only getting a 5% cap rate. So every day I keep that property, that $400,000 house, it's netting me $20,000 per year. Every year I keep it, I'm choosing to buy it at that price. Sam Zell wrote an amazing book called Am I Being Too Subtle? And in the book, he just realized, hey, if I choose to keep something because I could sell it and put that money somewhere else, I'm really buying at today's value. It doesn't mean run out and sell everything you have, but it means it's an important place to go look at it. So that example, if I could sell that property, even though my cap rate's insane because I bought $100,000, I'm getting a 20% cap rate off purchase. I'm only getting a 5% cap rate off today's value. So what I would do in that scenario, if I had an investment where I could 1031 exchange that, invest that, and say get an 8% cap rate or 10% call, that was possible, that would make a ton of sense for me to sell that property and reallocate it. I actually did this last week. I closed on a property and it was in Huntsville, Alabama, which you guys know I love. I'm selling my portfolio. It was outside of the Starbucks deal. I sold it, and I sold it because I wanted to move that asset into I had basically the same scenario. I have a 5% cap rate, and I actually in the middle of doing a 1031 exchange to a natural gas royalty, coal, which will pay 10 to 13% returns. It's got, there's some white space, so they might drill more wells. But the point is, I'm taking a lower cap rate, probably always trying to transition to, in my mind, a more efficient and better cap rate property. So that's the other way I think about rental properties. Hey, thanks for everyone that reached out about our upcoming mastermind. We are absolutely sold out. We are sold out for the May event, but we are going to go to a wait list. If you want to get on the wait list for our Be Wealthy Mastermind, go to the link in the show notes and we'll get you on the wait list. In case someone can't make it, we'll reach out. But as of right now, we are sold out. And if it doesn't work, we would invite you to, I think it's the September, or I think our next event is September. So we've got the link there if you want to join the waitlist for that. So Cole, I gave you two things to think about here, but before we go further, Cole, we've got questions from our listeners. But before we go to that, if you are enjoying what you're hearing, do us a favor. Will you, number one, subscribe? Don't miss out on anything. You do not want to miss what we're doing. Number two, give us a rating. But now we're going to go to our questions. You can submit additional questions at BeWealthyBrett.com. I mean, there's so many ways to get there when you focus on what's possible. And so, first question, I flip houses. I currently have 3 and 2 more under contract. I am leaving my 9-to-5 job to flip houses full time and will be receiving roughly $225,000 from my pension. Can I roll it over? Can I roll it over into my IRA to use more flips? What would you do? You should be able, the answer to that is most likely yes. Cole, that's what the expert says. Most likely yes. I would say I would get my friends at Horizon Trust. I can roll it over to my IRA or use it to buy more flips. What would you do? So the answer to that question is maybe. Maybe will you be able to do that? Possibly. I would go to maxoutretirement.com. We'll have a link in the show notes to who could actually give you the answer. They're who we work with all the time. They are the best at what they do. Reach out to them and see if you can do it. Some plans, most company plans will allow you if you're no longer there. So I don't think you'll be able to do it until you leave. But typically when you leave, you are able to self-direct. Some will allow you to do it when you're there. Some will not allow you to do it at all. But the majority, when you leave, you would be able to, I believe, take that pension, most likely move that to an IRA, and you could self-direct that, and you could do flips. Now, Cole, here's a critical part. You cannot go do 50 flips. The guidance we're seeing for a transaction like that inside of a self-directed, please go get advice from your counsel and your custodian and go check all this out and make sure it's legit, because I don't carry any license. I'm not a lawyer. Cole, not a rocket scientist. I don't have any financial license. I do have a banking license. Just want to keep, everything legit.
And a mobile home one. Hate to brag.
I'm not gonna give you all my licenses. What was our even point to that, Cole?
Buy real estate flips.
You could do 3-to-5. So the answer to that is you could do 3-to-5 flips per year inside of your self-directed retirement account. If that's a Roth, you would pay no tax when you pull it out. If it is regular, you would pull tax out when you start distributing it later. So I'm the biggest fan of self-directing your retirement accounts. I believe your money should be in your control where you invest and have an unfair advantage. And so I would absolutely do that. But check, I bet you're going to need to quit that job first before you can do that. Our next question is Lisa Stone with Keller Williams. And she said, when thinking about the flows of money, where do your business expenses come from? So the expenses just come right out of the business itself. The money that's beyond what is needed to run that business every month flows out of the business around and down into that wealth coordination account that is then used for your personal resources. So think about on your business, you're sweeping out all the overage and kind of getting that into one account so you can see your total available capital, and is that growing every single month or is it going down? And so you know when to put more pressure on yourself to invest your money. And we can have a link to the YouTube video we just filmed that I think will answer that question a little better. And so we can direct you there. And so Lisa, the other thing to think about, so when I point to those businesses on the right side of that video that we're going to link to in the show notes, there's all the businesses are to the right of that graph. The expenses are coming out of that business itself. So that business account is getting the income and the expense. The overage, the extra monies gets getting swept over into your personal world. I hope that makes sense. Last question from Brother Andrew Dorich. Do you have any thoughts on Lend to Live? I was shocked. I have not read that book, but because I'm a voracious reader, I'm going to get the book. And Andrew, I can't answer that question today. I want to, but I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to read the book, and you're going to remind me, Cole, on our next episode or the next one, maybe one or two, because I might need a minute. I got a whole reading list. I will nail that. And so with that, it is a wrap. I want to remind you of two things today. Number one, two things I want you to do today. I want you to go back and I want you to write your opportunity criteria. Do not let this get away from you. Go to notes on your phone, go to a sheet of paper, go in your journal, write out the 10 criteria that are going to define what you say yes to and what you say no to. And then I want you to go, if you've got a rental property, go run those calculations, get that rental tracker, go to our website and grab that and start using it. It is something that will be of immense value to you, and it gets all of the information organized so that you can make better decisions. As always, Cole, we're going to give you the final thought today. Final thought, Cole. What do you got before we wrap?
Got a lot on the spot here. Final thought is, if there's anything you need, go to bewealthybread.com/resources. God, what do we not have there?
Cole, well, we have a lot of stuff. But Cole, we're going to need a final thought from you. Final thought. Just take
any. Final thought is the business you might not be as excited about as you thought you were. You have to choose 1 to 5 and you can't pick 4.
Yeah.
That should qualify most of the opinions on whether it should actually go forward or not. That'll eliminate 99% of them. I've tried it myself, and I don't even bring them to you.
Well,
it's just not even worth. If I'm a 4, it's not even worth it.
You can't pick 4, Cole.
That's the hard part. Then it goes down to 3, and then now it's like, whoa, and now it's really far from 5.
And now it's in the trash can. And just like that, Cole, that was a very good. Hey, final thought, you nailed it. With that, it's always a great time here at Be Wealthy. I will see you next time on our podcast. I'll see you next time. Go out and be wealthy.